So, you know, how much trust would you have that your candidates are going to answer honestly during the job application process to items like, I find it difficult to get down to work?
So my guest for today's episode is, again, Leonie, our head of science. She's been here previously, I think in our third episode, about cognitive biases. And in this episode, we are going to specifically talk about social desirability. Leonie will explain what social desirability exactly is, why it also differs for different people, and obviously how it impacts the hiring process. And when discussing the hiring process specifically, we will also touch upon the effects of social desirability on traditional personality questionnaires. So I hope you will enjoy this episode today. Welcome back, Leonie.
Hi, nice to be back.
Hey, you were already in the, I think it was episode 3. Well, for everyone who's listening, it was the episode about how cognitive biases are created in your brain. Definitely, by the way, you should check it out. Can you do a very short intro for the people who don't know you yet?
Sure. So my name is Leonie Gonfier. I am the head of science at eCulture. I have a background in psychology and cognitive neuroscience. And well, now I'm currently working at eCulture and I'm responsible for managing the science team, which develops the games and tests them for doing what they're supposed to be doing, basically.
Thanks. Hey, and today we are going to talk about social desirability. I think a term that most people in, well, at least recruitment and HR know. Did you pick this topic, or was it Kat picking the topic for us?
I suggested the topic because I think it's a bias that comes up in quite a lot of different stages of hiring. So I think it's one that's definitely relevant and was missing in our collection so far.
Is social desirability a bias? Can we label that as a bias?
You can call it a bias or an effect. I think it is. It doesn't necessarily have to be conscious, but we're going to get there. So it can also be labeled as a bias.
Cool. Okay. If you would have to explain the topic of social desirability to someone who has never heard of the concept before, what would your explanation be?
I think the easiest way to explain it is by basically just stating what it says in the name. So it just describes our tendency to act or respond in a way that we believe is more socially acceptable than how we would act based on what we're actually thinking or feeling. So usually we do this to avoid negative judgments from others. That's something that we don't just see in like hiring processes. We actually see this in everyday life. So some examples are, for example, when we express ourselves in a very politically correct way, that is an example of social desirability bias. Or it's also often visible in how we present ourselves on social media. So, you know, by sharing mostly happy or aesthetically pleasing sides of our lives, that's also a way in which social desirability is kind of forming how we act and what we share about ourselves.
Yeah. If I hear you talking about the concepts, then my assumption would be that it's more a conscious thing rather than an unconscious thing. Maybe before I ask this question, by the way, could you briefly explain the difference between conscious and unconscious?
I think the easiest way is just for making this distinction is just by, are we aware of it or not? And is it part of our control thinking, or does it influence the way we're thinking without us being aware of it? So the unconscious parts would be us not being aware of how it influences our thinking, just driven by processes in the brain that, if you want to know more about that, I suggest you listen to episode 3 of this podcast.
Touché. That's fair enough. So the examples you mentioned, adjusting your behavior to a specific situation, picking specific content that you would like to put on your Instagram channel, for example. It all sounds to me like a conscious thing. Is there a scenario in which social desirability is an unconscious process?
There can be. So I think generally the extent to which it influences how someone will act, it really differs between individuals, and it also differs between situations. So For example, individuals with a higher need for approval tend to be more affected by this. And also situations where you know you'll be judged are going to be more likely to provoke this bias. So any situation where presenting yourself in a positive way is going to have positive outcomes for you, like an interview or a social media app or a dating profile or something like that. And it doesn't always have to be a conscious process. Often it also unconsciously expresses itself just by the things that we pick as the first things to present of ourselves or the first things we say if someone asks us any questions about ourselves. So it's not necessarily that I think, what is the first thing that comes to my mind about myself, but unconsciously will pick something that I think is not embarrassing or has any negative connotation.
Yeah, check. Yeah, so the way I introduce myself, usually I don't really think about that. It just, yeah, you do it so often that it's some sort of default thing. Mm-hmm. That is then an example of
it being unconscious.
Yeah. Oh, here I am thinking that social desirability was something that I was not doing. I do.
We know we're all biased, Charlotte.
We are biased by default. Yeah, definitely. If you would apply social desirability to a hiring setting, where in the hiring process do you think that it arises most, or where maybe the impact is also the biggest?
Well, I think there's multiple situations where it can come up. So any situation where the candidate is asked to judge themselves or rate themselves on an ability or their personality or behavior, for example. So any situation where it's possible to portray yourself or your skills in a certain way and there's no objective measure of it. So that can be in a questionnaire or in open questions that are being asked in the application or also in interviews. Another example is asking for things like a CV or a motivational letter. And those are also really likely to have a lot of information in them that are tailored to be a bit more socially desirable. So I don't think there's one specific step where it's most prominent. It actually can come in at any point in the hiring funnel where you ask people to judge themselves on it.
Something that I specifically want to talk about is assessments in the hiring process. And obviously, we are a bit biased here because we develop game-based assessments. So I think we do have a clear preference for a form of assessments. But I'd like to approach this discussion purely from a scientific perspective. If you would let your candidates complete a traditional personality questionnaire, the question and multiple choice answers, how does social desirability then influence how candidates are going to present themselves?
I think in traditional personality questionnaires, there's actually quite a lot of room for social desirability bias. So I think there's a lot of research of personality traits are associated with work performance, right? Which is why they're being used a lot in the hiring process, like those questionnaires to measure this. So for example, conscientiousness is a personality trait that is very often found to be positively related with how people perform at work. I have some examples of items that I brought with me that are on a conscientiousness questionnaire of a very widely used personality assessment, the Big Five. That's used a lot. So these questionnaires, they will ask you to rate yourself on how much you agree with statements. Yeah. Like, for example, I neglect my duties. That is a statement on a conscientiousness questionnaire. Or I find it difficult to get down to work. And then you just respond on a scale of 1 to 5, totally disagree to totally agree. So, you know, how much trust would you have that your candidates are going to answer honestly during a job application process to items like, I find it difficult to get down to work?
Yeah. Yeah, why would you pick that answer? It would be fair if you would pick it. I mean, I think it does apply to a lot of people that there you can have difficulties with going to. But I think it's the example. I also posted a question from the Big Five on my LinkedIn account a couple of months ago. I think one of the questions was literally, I consider myself to be an accurate person.
Yes.
So let's say you're going to apply for a finance job or a legal job, whatever. Yeah. If I would be honest, I would have rated myself low on that question. I know I'm not an accurate person, but why would you do that? It's yeah.
I mean, but that's again what I said before, right? There are differences between people's tendencies to respond in a more socially desirable way. So as a hiring manager, when you look at results of these questionnaires, you're never going to know who was actually honest and who inflated their scores because they thought, well, I'm not stupid. I'm going to obviously answer with what they want to hear because I want to get this job.
Yeah. Is this the same as, because there's a term self-report bias? You see it more, I think, nowadays in content in recruitment. Is that basically the same?
Yeah, I think that's very similar, because self-report bias and social desirability bias, in the end, you're just biasing your responses by trying to be more socially desirable.
So, yeah.
I think it's, we have this example now, I made this example of personality questionnaires, which I think, yeah, it shows pretty clearly how you might want to respond to these items, but there are more extreme surveys out there. Something else that I looked up also before was integrity assessments. That is something that quite a lot of companies use still today. And there is research that shows that people who score high on integrity assessments, they show fewer counterproductive work work, which is, you know, nice. Okay, so it seems to make sense to want to assess this during the hiring process. But examples of some of the items on integrity assessments are questions about how often someone has lied to their boss before, or how often someone has, you know, lied when declaring their taxes or cheated on exams.
Yeah.
And I'm now really wondering who fills out a job application and then admits to lying to their bosses and declaring tax fraud.
Yeah, we both have an opinion about this.
Yeah.
So basically, if I would summarize it in very dummy language, is as soon as there is, let's call it a self-assessment or self-reporting, there's basically no way to prevent social desirability playing a part.
Or there's no way to know who inflated their answers because of social desirability and who didn't. Obviously, there are people who might just be, who would naturally score high on an integrity assessment or who are very conscientious, but you're never going to know who they are because there's no control for who would inflate their scores and who wouldn't.
Yeah. And something that customers of our company ask me every now and then, and I think it ties in with high stake versus low stake, is if we are discussing, for example, the fact that they're using a Big Five personality test, usually you say, hey, but it is a validated test, right? So how come that you claim that it's not a very reliable method because of social desirability? But at the end of the day, it's just a validated test. We can all look up the report and see that it's correct. Does that tie in with the topic social desirable behavior in a high stake versus a low stake situation?
Yeah, definitely. So there are studies that actually looked at these comparisons. They would give people the exact same questionnaire once just when nothing was dependent on it. And then in another situation when they were told they were going to be judged based on their answers, and found very, very big differences between how people scored themselves on the exact same questionnaire.
Yeah.
So the difference between high and low stake situations and how people fill these in is well documented in research, I would say. The issue with, you know, these studies that find any relationships between factors and work performance, different kinds of factors, is that usually they're not conducted in a hiring setting. So these studies don't usually look at how their participants fill out a personality questionnaire when applying to a job and then measure how well they do on this job later. Usually the research study will let people who already work in a certain job fill out these questionnaires and then ask their managers, for example, to assess their performance.
Yeah.
But in that setting, for the employee, there's nothing dependent on how they fill out this questionnaire. They already have their jobs. So they're way more likely to fill them out honestly and show less social desirability in their answers than an applicant to an open job position.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is the big difference here then.
Yeah.
Hey, could you, this was not part of what we discussed up front. You know me by now.
I never stick to the script of a podcast. But could you maybe briefly for the people that are listening, because I mentioned, of course, already before, like we work with game-based tests, so it's not a test in which you need to rate yourself. Could you explain briefly how social desirability, I mean, let's be honest, there would always be an element of social desirability, I think, in any test out there, but how game-based assessments can limit the effect of social desirability?
I think a lot of the game-based assessments that exist out there, and also a couple of our assessments, are they measure our responses to certain things that we throw at them. And first of all, people don't really know what's going to happen in the game. It's quite uncommon. It's not something that you're necessarily going to be able to practice beforehand. And second of all, it's not things where it's an ability where you can just do it to the best you can.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to have a game for problem solving ability, a lot of what we look at there is how quickly people can solve the problems and how many moves they make when they solve a problem and how many steps they have to take. There's not really a way you can fake being better at that than
yeah.
you are.
Yeah.
So if it's an ability, there's not much you can do with social desirability. And then I think if it's something that's more about a preference of how to approach something, at least in our assessments, there isn't a clear, better way of doing something.
Mm-hmm.
We provide people with options of how they can respond to something, but either option has pros and cons. So we're
yeah.
looking for a tendency, and there's not really a clear, this is the way to go if you want to look good.
Yeah.
So I think that's the main thing. Not providing a socially desirable option is in
yeah.
the end how you can try to control for that.
Yeah, and maybe also the fact that we observe people, right? Rather than
mm-hmm.
Instead of me just telling you how I do my job.
Yeah.
I would just do a task and then you would basically observe how I'm doing it.
Yeah, so I mean, in the end, this is just making something more objective rather than subjective, the way that we're measuring behaviors.
Yeah. Do you think that, now I'm going to rephrase that question because it's never going to work. To what extent do you think that we, because of course, assessments is one part of it. We can look for better methods to remove or at least minimize the effects of social desirability. But then there's always still an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, there's not really, I think, a way in which we can completely prevent that in an interview, right?
No, I don't think there's a way you can completely prevent it, but I think you can still look at the types of questions you're asking and ask yourself if you can come up with a clear answer that you think would be the best one. If you can come up with that, then your candidate can probably come up with that too. So I think like a really good example of questions that are not great for interviews, I know not a lot of hiring managers are using them anymore, but things like asking your candidates for their strengths and weaknesses, it's stuff like that, where clearly
yeah.
no one is going to be very honest about their weaknesses, and then you end up getting a bunch of applicants who tell you their greatest weakness is that they're too much of a perfectionist. Or, you know, questions, I think, if you know you have questions in there that you could otherwise also assess differently in a more objective way, then rather try to find a more objective way of assessing it. Like, don't ask people, do you like working with other people? No one is going to say, no, I hate other people in
yeah.
a job interview.
Yeah.
But then, you know, get yourself assessment of collaborative behaviors, or get, you know, don't ask people how good are you at solving problems.
No.
First of all, people are horrible at judging how good or not good they are at certain abilities. And again, no one is going to say, I'm actually pretty bad at it.
No.
Need a lot of help usually. So.
Yeah, and I think that's also one of the issues. I remember that when Fleur and I started this company a couple of years ago, I was 21 years old. I had no clue. Yeah, I mean, I did work for a couple of years before I started this company, but I definitely did not know myself. I thought that I knew myself, but after a couple of years having this company, I now have, I think, a pretty clear idea of my strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you would also ask someone in an interview, maybe with the best intentions, even if you would ask the question, hey, what are your strengths and weaknesses? I think especially when people are a bit younger or when they enter the labor market, I think the longer you work, the better you get to know yourself. So apart from the fact that you can lie, obviously, about your answer, I think it's also maybe not fair to ask a very young, inexperienced person, like, hey, tell me about your strengths and weaknesses, because, yeah, what do you even base that on?
Exactly. I mean, especially if you hire for people who have never had a job before, maybe, or just coming straight out of uni, they don't know yet. They haven't even experienced the kind of settings yet. So how are they supposed to know how well they collaborate with different teams if all they've done was sit in lecture halls so far?
Yeah. Would situational judgment questions, let's phrase it like that, there are, of course, situational judgment tests, but I think what we always try to do here, we of course use our own interview guides for that as well, is to, instead of just indeed asking people about, hey, for example, do you recognize yourself in the score, ask a very practical question like, hey, if this were if you were put in this situation and this happens, what would you do then?
Yeah.
Do you think that situational judgment questions could limit the impact of social desirability?
Yeah, I think that would be at least better than just a very broad, open question on just what do you think of your skills or how well you do this.
Yeah.
Generally, by asking for an example or, you know, how would you do this and or how have you done this in the past situation, that's a little, makes it a little bit more difficult for the candidate to come up with the most socially desirable way on the spot of what they think you might want to hear there.
Yeah.
So I think that would be less eliciting that bias.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Hey, so if you would, well, you do that, of course, because you hire people for your own team. If you would have to design the, well, I'm not going to say the perfect hiring process, because it can never be completely perfect. But if you would have to advise people that are listening to this podcast on how to structure your hiring process in a way that social desirability at least is limited as much as we can, what would you advise them to do?
I think generally the first step would be going through all the steps in your hiring process and just figuring out in which of them this bias could arise. And then, so, you know, check how often you're relying on your candidate's own subjective rating of their skills, personality, behaviors. And then I would say, if possible, for any of that information, if that's relevant for your hiring decision, try to find some objective measure of it. And if you cannot find an objective measure of it, but you still want to ask about it, then be aware of the possibility of this bias. So don't make your final decision based on that information, I would say. So don't say, oh, I have two candidates here and they're really similar, but one of them just, you know, rated themselves higher on this certain thing, so we're going to go with that one.
Yeah. So basically the question that you should ask yourself, I think it applies, by the way, to every single bias out there, but with every piece of information that you have from your candidates in the hiring process, is that based on what either I think or what the candidate thinks, or is it something that we actually reveal through an objective way of measuring?
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you're very interested in, you know, the personality traits of your employees, I would say just don't assess them in the hiring process, but rather in your teams that you already have working for you, because the assessment will give you much more accurate results if their employment status is not dependent on their answers.
If it's a low-stake situation.
It is a low-stake situation, exactly.
Is there any topic at the meantime, quickly going through everything that I wanted to ask you? Is there any topics that we missed that you think is still relevant to mention with regards to this topic?
I think in terms of also what we discussed a little bit before the podcast, in terms of ways of how you could minimize this effect with personality assessments, or if there are ways to assess personality without social desirability playing a role in there, I think that one is you know, the next question that you would maybe ask yourself is something you find interesting in your candidates. It's a difficult question. It's self-assessments are still the main way to go when you want to assess personality traits. There are some implicit personality tests that use reaction times to certain words, but there's not that much research on that yet, and it's definitely not a common practice in hiring yet. There is a lack of research at the moment. But there have been some attempts by researchers to control for social desirability bias, like adding some questions to self-assessments questionnaires that are specifically designed to measure how likely someone would be to give socially desirable answers.
Yeah, the control questions they call it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there is actually two main problems with that. So the first one is that the social desirability likelihood scales, they don't validate very well, so they don't seem to be working very well. Mm-hmm. And the second problem was found when researchers did a study with hiring managers and how they actually use these scores. So there's a study that gave hiring managers the results of personality questionnaires of their applicants together with a score for the likelihood that the applicant would have responded in a socially desirable way. And they found that actually a lot of hiring managers preferred candidates with a high likelihood of giving socially desirable answers. So then they asked the hiring managers why. And they said that at least then they know that the applicant is putting in the effort to come across as positively as they can. So they basically saw...
Fair enough.
So low social desirability likelihood is not even trying to come across as positive. Which, you know, it's funny in a way, but in the end...
Because people then associate social desirable behavior with, hey, I really want to do it right, or I want to... So I show that I put some effort into...
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, is funny, and maybe you can take it as some sort of measure of how much effort people are putting into this. But what are you really measuring then with these personality questionnaires? Are you measuring the personality, or are you measuring the personality that your candidate would like to have?
Yeah.
Or are you measuring the personality that your candidate thinks you would like them to have?
Yeah. Well, my personal opinion about personality in general, also, we obviously have behavioral games, is that, so correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not the expert here, but for me, personality is just who you are, and behavior is, for me, is more the way in which you express your personality in, it could be a work-related setting, but it could also be with friends, of course. I think at the end of the day, if you want to hire someone for a job, I think it's much more relevant to know how they will actually behave in the job rather than knowing their personality, with the likelihood that there is some influence of social desirability in there, of course. But maybe they have personality X, but they behave very different. Because, of course, I think personality, but again, correct me if I'm wrong, is maybe more fixed, and behavior can also change a little bit over time. So my personal opinion is anyways that I would always prefer behavior over personality.
I mean, the thing is that, of course, you can't completely separate personality and behavior, because for a lot of people, behaviors are how their personality is expressed.
Yeah.
So it does tie in with each other. But the thing with measuring behaviors, there's a lot more consistency in that than with personality. As in, there is consistency with personality assessments, but as we already discussed, not in high-stakes situations.
Oh.
And there's just, at least I haven't thought of a way yet on how to make a hiring process not a high-stakes situation for your candidate.
Yeah.
Unless they just really don't care about whether they get the job.
Yeah, and then they probably wouldn't even finish the assessment.
Exactly.
So I really want to thank you for being here today. I will make sure to, maybe we can add some of the research that we discussed in the podcast to the notes of the podcast for everyone who's interested in looking up those studies. You will definitely be on one of the episodes again in the very near future. And for everyone who's listening and has a question for Leonie about social desirability or maybe a different concept, always feel free, of course, to reach out on LinkedIn. We are also soon, maybe by the time, by the way, that this podcast is going to be live, already have it, but we are going to launch a community as well. where Leonie and her team are going to answer questions that people might have with regards to science in general, or specific questions related to recruitment, obviously, because science is a bit too broad. So you can also find us there. And thanks again for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me back.